Welcome to Reality Check. What is going on? I am Matt O'Leary, joined as always by my good friend Jeremy Jets Chaos. An hour later than we usually go, so I thank you for pushing it back. It's a little scheduling conflict this afternoon, but how's it going, Jeremy? How are you?
Oh, it's going. It's going. Here we are. Things are getting as interesting as ever in the world of being a Jets fan, isn't it?
Yeah, that's for damn sure. It's tough out there in the Twitter streets, fighting the good fight about everything. And it's the off season. This is what we do best, right? Like, the season finally came to a close. Jets finished 3-14. It was a not so very fun season. And now we get to do all the mock drafts and what about this guy and which defensive coordinator should they bring in? And I was just so happy that season finally came to a close.
Oh, well, you were at halftime with me. The second half of that game for me and Dana was like, felt like 5 years. I mean, and it was so nice when it finally ended. It was so nice to get out, to just have that game end and just get out of it, you know. And you know, and it, you know, a couple of little things that get overlooked, you know, we talk about it a little, but just some things moving forward for the organization that went well on Sunday was when we woke up, we had the third and the 18th pick. And when the day ended, we have the second and the 16th pick. And also, it got out finally with the rules and the way it rotates in each round. It turns out we have the 33rd pick, which is the first pick in the second round. And as we all know, it's never the perfect 32 players that get picked in the first round that everybody predicts and knows. There's a variance. So there's a lot of guys that slip out of the first round that a lot of us have graded as first round picks. And the experts have graded as first round picks because nobody gets it perfectly. Nobody could write down the top 32 picks perfectly, which means that 33rd pick is very valuable also. It's almost another first round pick. It's like literally one pick off of whoever wins the Super Bowl. It's a pretty valuable pick. And it's also going to be nice after day one of the draft overnight to know whoever's left on the board. We're going to get to analyze that. And we're going to get to know that the next day we get first dibs. Like, so after day one of the draft ends, we have the excitement of who are we going to pick tomorrow? And we get the first choice of all the guys who slip.
Yeah, I love that. Because just exactly how you laid it out, every year the night ends and we're looking, okay, who's available, right? Who could be there when the Jets picks up? Well, once whoever wins the Super Bowl, once that pick is off the board and that's made to end night one, Jets are on the clock and they have like almost 24 hours. So it's always a lot of fun. And one of my favorite things, I make this joke every year, but every year there's like 40 guys who are without a doubt going round one. And obviously there's not 40 picks. So yeah, you're going to, the talent trickles into the top of the second round is the point. And the Jets get the first crack at that, which is pretty nice.
And there's always one or two that you really didn't see coming, where 98% of the people had them going in the first round, right? There's always the shocker guy and maybe two, usually two and sometimes more. But there's going to be that one or two guy. What we have to hope is it's in one of the positions of our need, which is not going to be that hard because there's not many positions we don't need. As long as it's not offensive tackles that slip in this draft. It's hard to imagine it not being like a couple of these guys that slip are guys that would help our team.
Yeah, no, absolutely, without a doubt. And, you know, I think that's a good spot to jump into the main meat and potatoes of what we're doing here today. Wanted to start with Aaron Glenn, a very hot button issue right now amongst Jet fans. The Jets are, as we know and have known for a while, they're keeping Aaron Glenn, but you know, there's been a lot of firings around the league and guys like Kevin Stefanski and John Harbaugh have become available. And it just feels like the cries are getting louder for the New York Jets to fire Aaron Glenn. What do you make of all this? Just your reaction to Glenn staying and these other guys who have become available.
You know, I had a very calm demeanor about it. I said, well, I knew he was here for 2 years. He's going to stay. The odds are he's going to fail and get fired. There's a chance they'll improve and he'll stay around. And then there's another chance that we won't keep improving and he'll get fired, or he will and everybody will be wrong and he'll end up being the future coach. Right. I mean, but it wasn't looking very good for that. And I accepted that. I accepted he was going to be here for another year and knew that if he failed, yes, we're going to look back and say we wasted an extra year than we should have. But there's this other factor that comes in suddenly, right? And it only matters if any of these guys would have come here anyway. But I call it the opportunity cost.
Yeah.
What's the opportunity cost of staying with Glenn another year? Because now it's no longer just, oh, we wasted another year. Now it's who could we have gotten and what could have been. Now, I don't know if Stefanski or if John Harbaugh would be even available to us. I really don't. But if there any if there's any chance that they are available to us and we're not pursuing it, quietly behind the scenes talking to his agents, their agents about it, if we're not doing that due diligence and there's an opportunity cost there of we didn't find out. And if we find out that they would be interested but make the decision of, no, we decided to go with Aaron Glenn, that's a crime. That's almost criminal. That, I almost charge Woody Johnson with a crime.
That's dumb. And I had a very similar reaction, right? Like when the news broke, I quote tweeted and I said, it would never happen, dot, 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 but dot, 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 essentially saying like, if there was ever a world where John Harbaugh wanted to come here, obviously I would rather John Harbaugh coaching this team than Aaron Glenn. I think it would be silly to say otherwise, even if you're, you know, still one of the bigger Aaron Glenn defenders, which I guess I find myself on, even though it was really more so just like, I don't know. I came to the realization that he's going to be here in year two and like trying to hold on to some things that, you know, maybe you could build off of and go into another year. But right now, Kevin Stefanski and John Harbaugh are two coaches who are available and two coaches that are going to garner a lot of interest. And, you know, supposedly John Harbaugh was reached out to by a team that already has a head coach, and that was revealed this morning that it was the Miami Dolphins. So how about, you know, Jets stick with Aaron Glenn, John Harbaugh ends up in Miami, and now you got to go up against John Harbaugh and the Dolphins, Mike Vrabel, Drake May and the Pats, and Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills in your own division.
And you have to say why, like if Miami got him because then, you know, and gave him a big contract, that it is because of money and we could have gotten them. Because it's not like Miami's a better spot for a head coach to go. What's their owner is no better, right? He's been has tons of bad publicity. You know, has been a total lunatic and lost respect of everybody. Miami has no quarterback. They're in a bad quarterback situation, but they don't have the number second pick in the draft. They don't have, you know, the number 16th pick. They don't have three picks next year. One could argue, why would Miami be a better destination for John Harbaugh, like if he was to consider them, than us? If he chose Miami, you'd have to assume it was about money, and you'd have to ask the question of, well, why didn't we come in there and just outbid them for him?
Yeah, it's a fair question to ask. Now, the chance, like the spot that I don't think you want to put yourself in is go, oh, you know, here's the shiny new object of Stefanski or Harbaugh, and we're going to fire Aaron Glenn without knowing for certain you're going to get one of those two guys. And I don't know how you go about doing that, but it would really suck if the Jets fired Aaron Glenn and be like, okay, now you get to choose from, like, I don't know, some other random coordinator that nobody really wants.
Yeah, I mean, if we didn't get those two, I think that, of course, I don't know if it's legal. I don't know how much of it is right or ethical, but the answer is you don't fire him until you know that one of those two guys isn't really interested and you're going to be able to get them. Like New England knew they were going to get Vrabel when they fired Mayo. There was no doubt about that. If anybody doubts that, you're out of your mind. They absolutely knew 100%. We all knew the second Mayo was fired where Vrabel was going, right? That was, so it's that obvious. So you have to already know, and in case that they don't and they're stupid enough to, like, if they fire him without a plan, which I'm not saying, I know there are people that want to fire him regardless. My only problem with that is if you don't have a plan, you get some other joke. And what are you going to do? Just keep firing coaches every year because you're not getting the right guy? Like, at some point, you have to, you know, you're going to have to wait on somebody, right? So I would say, though, if you fired those two, if I see it in the chat, it's not the only guy out there that I would then – I would be okay with them firing him and hiring not just those two, but I could live with Cliff Kingsbury. Yeah. I really could live with him. And the reason and the argument for that would be because we're going to be taking a quarterback or getting a new quarterback one way or another within either this offseason, most likely, or next offseason. And how often do we get an opportunity to get an offensive-minded quarterback guru type of coach? And we've wanted that forever. I don't think the Jets would fire AG over him, and I'm not saying they should have to, but for the other two coaches, if you think there's a chance, if they should be sniffing out if those either of those two guys would be interested, and if either of those two guys are interested, and we could and know we could do it, we should.
Yeah,
and we know that we should.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and Kingsbury is an interesting one. I mean, in Arizona, I didn't think he was a great coach as a head coach, but he has two success stories with Kyler Murray and Jaden Daniels. And I know like Kyler Murray's likely getting moved on from, but the first 3 years of his career, he looked like a real player. And then he got hurt and then coaching changes the whole thing. But yeah, at least he has that proven track record with young quarterbacks. So that I understand why people are enticed by him. I've seen some bring in Cliff Kingsbury as the offensive assistant. I don't think he's taking an offensive assistant job with the Jets. I think he's, you know, either taking an offensive coordinator job or a head coach job. And it doesn't seem like either of those are going to be available for the Jets.
Yeah, that's the problem. You know, and it's interesting because when I say with him as a head coach, I don't think he's a home run like the other two, which is why I say you shouldn't fire Glenn for him. But I do want to point out that when coaches are available, there's usually a reason, right? And even with the two that we want, you know, 18 years, he won a Super Bowl, but, you know, he missed the playoffs. They underperformed this year. He hasn't gotten to a Super Bowl with Lamar Jackson. These are the reasons why Baltimore fired him. I think they're nuts because, yeah, well, who are you going to hire that's better is the real reply to that, right? If there were five guys out there with also won Super Bowls who were, you know, great coaches that have come off winning seasons that were available, you could say, okay, you fired John Harbaugh because you've had enough. But like, what's your plan, Baltimore? You know, and the same thing with Cleveland, it's a joke because you know Cleveland's not going to replace Stefanski with a better coach than Stefanski. It's a joke. It's a ridiculous decision by them. Those opportunities don't happen often, but without those things, those two things aside, you're either getting a rookie coach, a coordinator who's very good that you're excited about, or you're getting a head coach with some question marks because there's a reason they're available. And that's what Kingsbury is. He's a guy with those question marks, but many successful coaches in the NFL have had a failure somewhere, went back to being a coordinator, and then came back to being a successful head coach.
Yeah, or sometimes you even just need the year off, right? Like you'd have the year out of the NFL, and then, you know, from there you come back in and have that, you know, success. At Harbaugh's age, he's 64. Like, I don't think he's someone who needs the year off, but, you know, like Kingsbury did, where'd he go? He went to like Thailand or something like that, and then, you know, made his way back into the NFL and, you know, had a success story. So I'm with you on that. I don't think there's going to be any movement. So I was never really getting my hopes up for it. Like, again, I want to say again, of course, John Harbaugh would be an upgrade here. One, they're not moving on from Aaron Glenn. Number two, with all the other openings, is he going to be running to the Jets to work for Woody Johnson? I have a hard time believing that.
That's the point. You know, if there were no other jobs and everybody was holding on to the coach and he's the only one that got fired and nobody else was looking and he says, I want to coach, then you and the Jets of Miami are definitely two teams that said, well, screw it. Let's fire our coach and get this guy now. Right. We're in a position to do that. But the reality is there, you know, the New York Giants, as much as we hate to say it at Jet fans, just as a franchise and ownership and whatever, just their history, and they have a quarterback in place that we don't know if John Harbaugh believes in or Stefanski believes in, there's nothing we could do to lure them away from that, you know, anyway. And we have to live in reality, right? I think we probably just talked about it enough, you know, 16 minutes into the show. The reality is that Aaron Glenn is our coach next year. And that's just the reality. And I'm hoping eventually this anger about it and the, you know, fire him and the yelling about it will die down, because I don't know if I could live with it for the next 4 or 5 months until the season starts. Like I just, you know, it's like at what point does this fizzle out? Like that I was just going to come into every chat and say the same thing. Aaron Glenn sucks. He needs to be fired. Like at some point we have to let it go. people have to let it go and just understand this is our reality. And now there's other things to talk about.
Yeah. So before we get into the Aaron Glenn stuff, I have a hot take with John Harbaugh that I wanted to share and get your opinion on. You want to hear me out on this?
Sure.
I think, you know, he's already been linked to the Giants and there's a ton of openings. All the teams have reached out to him. Teams, even with head coaches, have reached out to him. If the Buffalo Bills lose to Jacksonville in the wild card game, I could see them pulling the ripcord on McDermott and Harbaugh being the guy to step in there. What do you think of that?
Wow. It's a hot take.
It is a hot take. I'm not going to come out and give you say it's a hot take and give you a lukewarm one. It's a hot take.
I'm just saying, that's a sizzling hot take. Look, it would be shocking. I don't think it's like ridiculous. There's nothing to, you know, like in the sense of you're out of your mind, that makes no sense kind of thing. And, you know, or anything like that. Like if it would be very shocking, but you know why they did it. It's like nobody would sit there and say that makes no sense. Why would you do that? We would understand exactly what they're doing. They would be saying McDermott is just keeps coming short. And here's a guy who's gotten to a Super Bowl. And Josh Allen has a certain window. When you get your franchise quarterback, you have a window with them. And each year that they don't win, that window clicks away and gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And then you see a Super Bowl coach come available. Like, so we would understand why they if it happened, we would understand why. But it would be shocking.
It would be big. By the way, I think Buffalo wins that week. So this week against Jacksonville. But just tossing it out there as a scenario, right? Because there's a lot. I feel like there's a lot of media hype around like this has got to be the year for the Bills. There's no Mahomes, no Lamar, no Burrow. When are they ever going to come out of the AFC? If they got bounced in the first round, I just think there might be some pressure, you know, tuned up on the coach. That's all.
Yeah, yeah. You'd have to think that, you know, and you know, then you have Baltimore might get McDermott, you know, and it might be a swap of coaches. That's what it could be. Maybe they both needed to change the scenery. You know, and sometimes change of scenery is the answer, because you also got to put on the other lens here with John Harbaugh. And I love him, but don't get me wrong. I'd love to have him as our coach. He's better than any coach we've had since Parcells, that's for sure. But I don't want to offend the Rex Ryan fanatics out there, but I think that we have to remember he had Lamar Jackson for a bunch of years as well, just like McDermott has had Josh Allen.
That's true.
There hasn't been a Super Bowl. Right. And, no. and Baltimore's had a great roster. There's lots of talent on their roster. It's not like, oh, but they never gave him this. They never gave him that. The only complaint I have about Baltimore when I look at them over the years, and it's the same, they're modeled the same way Kansas City is since Tyreek Hill left. And that's, they do it with tight end. And to them, that means don't load up on wide receiver. And I don't understand, if you have those quality of quarterbacks, and it seems like Buffalo is doing it too now. It's amazing to me that those teams, Buffalo, Baltimore, you know, and Kansas City, don't seem to value really putting and investing a lot in wide receivers to help out those quarterbacks.
Yeah, it's surprising, right? I can't believe they haven't adjusted course.
Yeah, like Randy Moss went to New England. I mean, not that he didn't win other Super Bowls, Tom Brady, but they immediately and easily won the Super Bowl. They were unbeatable. When you gave him a great, great wide receiver, right? I don't understand what's the resistance, you know, of, I understand that they showed they could do it. Like Kansas City proved you could do it, but Kelsey is kind of like a different animal.
Sure.
Obviously, you know, but after Tyreek Hill left, the fact that they still won a Super Bowl, but I just don't understand, like, aren't you making it harder on yourself? Like,
yeah,
you see, like, find a way to get a really good wide receiver room when you have a quarterback like that. I just don't get it. Green Bay fiddled around with it forever. They ended up with Devontae Adams, and you saw what that did for Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
But they wouldn't use a first-round pick on a wide receiver, and a lot of people said that Aaron Rodgers was pissed off at them at that, was very frustrated. It's a weird thing to me. It's a weird, strange thing to me that you have these great quarterbacks, and you don't want to put playmaking, you know, star kind of big, huge playmaking wide receivers in the room, you know, and in on the offense with them.
Yeah, I don't get it. I really don't. I want to hit up some of the comments before we keep this thing rolling. wanted to pull this one up from Mike. Says, I just still can't wrap my head around Woody. How, with the parity that exists now, can he not make the playoffs for 15 seasons? It's uncanny. The Panthers made the playoffs this season on accident, which is true. They made it at 8-9. I don't know if we will ever see another run like this. I know Buffalo had that long, 19 years, I think, for Buffalo. Yeah. Cleveland obviously had a long one. But this is such a good point from Mike. Like, this league is built for teams to turn it around a lot quicker than the Jets clearly have.
The league is built for parity, in a sense. I mean, it didn't turn out that way this year. You know, we had a 3-14 record. We still didn't get the number one pick. We almost got, you know, the Giants went back all the way to the sixth spot for one win. So you see that there's a bunch of teams on the bottom that are very bad. So the parity thing is not really working. But the one thing that has worked is teams' ability to turn it around by getting the better draft picks, by the salary cap being there and so solid. Like, it's a very solid cap. You can manipulate it so much, but it's there and it's real. And it makes it that teams can't hold on to all their stars. So no team holds on to, you know, if one team does a great job and drafts everybody, there's only, you know, you can't hold them all. You can't maintain them all. So, but that helps the parity of the league, right? It stops one team from becoming too dominant. Yet Patrick Mahomes comes along. You know, first it was Tom Brady and then it was Patrick Mahomes. And they, you know, they destroy the narrative up top. That's up top, but they didn't destroy the narrative in the middle. Like, in the middle, that's, you know, like you said, it's rare and it might be a long time before it happens again. Before you see a team go so long without making the playoffs because of the way the league is designed. And only Woody, it seems, could have managed to pull this off.
Now, this is a take from Jets Terrible, which I've seen a lot, but he says, I don't mind waiting till 2027 because Glenn stinks and we'll have a top three pick next year. Bank on it. Have you seen our schedule? I want to say it like this, and I want to get your thoughts on it. I understand people who want to wait till 2027, especially if something we'll get into next on the segment here with Dante Moore. If Dante Moore doesn't come out and Fernando Mendoza goes one and you're sitting at two, what the hell do you do? I just have a very, very hard time thinking Aaron Glenn and Darren Mougie are going to pass up taking a quarterback this year if one's available to them. Because if they say, oh, we'll wait till 2027, but go out and win four games next year, they're probably not going to be the ones making that pick in 2027. So they will never get their chance to take a swing at quarterback.
It would have to be Woody Johnson with them in the room saying, okay, I'm not going to fire you. I know we're going to suck because we're not going to take a quarterback. We'll get like a bridge quarterback. It probably won't work. You have complete job security. We could wait till 2020. That's what it would take. Right, for them to not be in the mindset of, because that's not going to happen. They're in the mindset of, you're right. Like, people think, they're not thinking long term. Oh, we could wait till 2027 to get a quarterback. Right now, Aaron Glenn and Mougie has to be thinking, we need to get a quarterback in here like yesterday. You know, like, we need to solve this problem to save our job. So you're right. It's not necessarily like even if it's better for the organization to wait till 2027, the problem is, and this happens to a lot of teams, we're not the only one. The problem is the motivation and the need of the people running the show, the GM and the coach, might not align with what Jets Terrible is saying and what's better for the long run of the organization. They need instant success. They need to show improvement. They're looking for their quarterback as soon as possible.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And like, based on what they said in the press conference this week too, like, Darren Mougie was talking about, like, we need to be competitive next year. I think that's them realizing, like, hey, yeah, we set ourselves up with these draft picks the next 2 years. But again, like I said, you might not get that chance in 2027. Like, 7 wins in 2 years, that's very hard to justify giving those guys a third year. And I think they realize that.
Yeah. It's very hard, especially, I mean, I almost got the sense, I started to get the feeling in the last 3 or 4 weeks that they might swing Woody, because we've seen him affected by, you know, at least his grandkids have then affected him. Yeah. We've seen evidence that he could be affected by the reaction of the fan base, that the reaction of the fan base can influence some of his decisions. And I got to, I got to a point where I started to believe, you know what? Maybe they're really going to fire this guy. Maybe they're going to, maybe the fans are really, you know, the media, the fans, whatever, everything that was happening and going on. I said, maybe they're going to get into Woody's head. He's going to say, yeah, this is a shit show and I got to end this now. You know, and I think there are a lot of fans who yell that to us where people aren't going crazy saying, hey, join in with us because we can make a difference if we complain loud enough.
Yeah, no, that's true. He's very reactionary, right? Like we've seen him be reactionary. What are you think? Last kind of thing for me here on the Aaron Glenn conversation, and we can start getting into the Dante Moore stuff. What do you think the chances of him actually turning it around and being okay next year is? Like, what, I guess in a way, what's your confidence level at? And then just like, I don't know, what does he have to do?
You know, there's the statistical thing that says it's not likely, right? Just like with when you pick a quarterback in, you know, in the third or later round, statistically, it's not likely they're going to ever be a real quarterback in the league. Yet we always name outliers. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with this. Most coaches who fail miserably their first year statistically are not going to ever be successful, right? But there are outliers, right? So from that point, if I was a gambling person, if I'm in a casino, if I'm thinking like a gambler, the statistics tell me that he's not going to be successful, right? And the odds of him being successful are going to be like an 8-1 or not, whatever it is. The reality is, though, is everybody's different. The situation is different. The individual is different. I am going to, if I'm going to be fair about one thing, okay? If I'm going to analyze him as a coach, and this still doesn't defend him, it doesn't make him look to be that great, but I'm certainly going to look at him and judge him and think of him as the coach for the first 11 games of the season.
Okay.
Well, 11, 12 games of the season. Like, that's the coach that I'm going to look at the job he did, the good, the bad, the ugly. I'm going to throw out the last 5 games. I really am. I'm going to throw out those games because I don't know if they were really putting together real game plans at that point. They were starting a rookie undrafted free agent, that which means they were a handicapped offense, running an offense for a new guy that, you know, that only he could handle the defense. You know, they traded away the 2 best defensive players. They fired the defensive coordinator that he was dumb enough to hire to begin with, granted. But I think it's fair enough to say he didn't magically, that whole coaching staff didn't magically forget how to coach after 12 games, and the last 5 games were who they are and what the best they were capable of. Like, that's kind of ridiculous. Like, it didn't magically happen. The coach that he is the coach we saw games 1 through 11, 1 through 12, whatever it is. And it wasn't good, but it certainly should at least be looked at it that way, because that team, those first 12 games, the record wasn't good, but they had won a few games. There was some competitiveness there. Some of those games were close. We could have won. And you could say, well, they were rebuilding a new roster. It was the first year, and plenty of coaches have had a bad first year and managed to turn it around. I mean, that's the best possible outlook. I'm being as positive as I humanly could be as I say this.
Yeah.
And that's the best way I could look at it, is do I think he had any potential to grow from the coach he was after 10 games into the season next year with improvements on the roster? That's how I have to look at it. I don't know, but it doesn't seem as bad as when you look at our entire season as a whole.
I've said this in my podcast episode earlier this morning, but I mean, the leading tackler for the Jets in this game against the Buffalo Bills is Kedron Smith. Jeremy, we followed this team pretty closely here. Who the fuck is Kedron Smith?
No fucking clue. I mean, that was a third game of the preseason, last game of the preseason, practice squad or cut roster that we were watching on that field. Right? I mean, and it's been a lot of that, you know, for the past month. And that's not defending Glenn. Like, no. People get mad when you say things like that. We're just saying the truth. Like, you can't sit there and say that this coaching staff was using the best possible personnel available to them to win games the last month of the season. They clearly weren't. And that makes me think, well, maybe that also had to do with how much effort they were putting into game plans. Were they showing, was Estran showing every play he had now? Was there any point of it? Like with this Brady Cook quarterback, is there a chance that he has a lot more plays and schemes and a lot more potential as an offensive coordinator when you give him a real quarterback? I think those are legitimate questions to at least ask.
Yeah, and they're going to let it play out. And a part of me doesn't blame them for wanting to see how it plays out. And we'll see if the Jets made the right decision by holding out to Aaron Glenn. Obviously, that's what we should be rooting for as Jet fans, but it's very much an unknown. He wasn't good in year one. I think we could obviously say that. I think you just got to wait and see what happens in year two. And, you know, a big part of that is quarterback. And I think that's a good spot to transition to the Dante Moore conversation. Before we dip into the, well, what if he doesn't come out of school? Can we talk about the now multiple people who have said that Dante Moore should not come out just to avoid the New York Jets?
Yeah. That's, you know what, as much as we turn our own franchise and say bad things about our own franchise, it is absolutely unacceptable to me that professional journalists are saying that. I think it's incredibly irresponsible and dangerous for the sport. Like, because what if that became a big thing and journalists start putting that in the athletes' heads, right? What if that became a thing of, that's the last thing we want to happen to professional football, that college football players start saying, I'll stay in school to avoid that team. Or they'll take it to the next level. They'll do what, Eli Manning did and the whole Phillip Rivers thing. And they'll start being more bold about coming out or making announcements. I won't play for that team. That will destroy this sport or damage this sport greatly. We do not want that happening in the NFL. That is bad for football, right? We want the system that you enter the draft, you get drafted, you play for the team that drafts you. If you don't want to stay there, you know the way the rookie contract works. They got team control over you for so long, and then you can go play elsewhere. That's how the NFL works. And for these journalists to come out and start trying to speak this into truth almost, because they're pulling it out of their ass, but to try to speak it into truth that players should try to avoid, that should make decisions in their life like that based on, well, I don't want to play for that team. You know, and then the other obvious argument is any team, unless they trade it up, that has a top three pick for a quarterback is not a very good team at the moment. There's a reason that they're there.
Yeah, right? Jeremy, so the number one pick, the Raiders have five coaches in the last 5 years.
Five coaches in the last 5 years, which means five different systems, right? So that's the track that they're on, right? And they've been terrible also, right? They've been a terrible team. Why is that a better organization? Why aren't they saying avoid? Why aren't they saying Mendoza should find a way to sit out and avoid being a Raider? What's good about being a Raider now? Like, what's good about that?
They were
that
good in the 70s.
Because they were good in the 70s. So now we're going to bring history into it that has anything to do with the organization the way it sits today. What about waiting till next year? Yeah, then Dante Moore, let's say he stays in school to avoid being a Jet. And then next year he gets drafted by the Cleveland Browns. Is that better? Is the Cleveland Browns better? Because who do you think is going to be on top of the draft board next year drafting quarterbacks?
The
bad teams. Do you
think
it's going to be a dream situation? Like, this is so stupid, and those journalists are ridiculous.
Yeah, I love this. Boss Girl calls it out perfectly and says, and journalists not being honest about their biased motivations. McShay doing his BFF Joe Douglas a favor with that take to stick it to the Jets because he got fired for sucking. We have to keep in mind Todd McShay and Joe Douglas very close. He wasn't one of the ones saying, oh, Trevor Lawrence shouldn't come to the Jets in 2021 because his buddy was here. But now it's, oh, you can't possibly send this kid. If I'm Dante Moore, I'm not putting myself to the Jets. But he mocked him to the Raiders, who's going to hire their sixth coach in the last 6 years in the next few weeks.
Right. The team has been a joke. The team has been a joke. They've had guys arrested. The guy, you know, the two number one picks of the past 5 years that are no longer in the NFL because of legal problems. I mean, like this is a good organization. That's why I almost think is like it, people should be talking about if Mendoza, Mr. I would first, every time you put a microphone in his face, I would like to thank, give all the glory to God, belongs on the freaking Raiders in Vegas. Is that a match?
I don't think so.
Is that a match for Mendoza? You know, like, but it's ridiculous to sit there and say, I'm going to stay in school to avoid being picked by a bad team. Every year it's going to be the exact same. the team that takes you is, if you go in the top five, is a bad team. Yeah. And I will argue whose situation is better for Dante Moore, the Jets or the Raiders. The Jets have not only another two picks in three picks in that draft that are in the top 50, one at 16, one at 33 to build around you. They already have their offensive tackle set. They have a pretty good offensive line. They have a WR1. They have a developing tight end. I'm not sitting here saying the Jets are great. Woody Johnson, great organization to be. But if you're looking at the Raiders and you're looking at the Jets as a quarterback, you want to come in and play. What are you thinking about? Who am I going to throw the ball to? The Raiders have no one to speak of right now except the tight ends, Bowers. We have a wide receiver and a tight end, right? And draft picks to fix it and remedy that and add more weapons. And we have an offensive line to protect you. Yeah. Geno Smith was getting killed this year. You want to go in there and be a Raider and get killed, Dante Moore? Or do you want to come to the New York Jets? Right. So, I mean, so these journalists are clueless to me. It's like they lack critical thinking skills, because I don't see how you can argue that on the field, the Raiders are a better situation than the New York Jets.
No, their offensive line's terrible, and they play in a division with the Broncos, the Chargers, and the Chiefs. Those are three good defenses. It's going to put them in a really tough spot, this young quarterback. I think it will.
Yeah. So I don't understand. There are some people that don't like Mason Taylor's a tight end, and that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. Like, what did you expect Mason Taylor to do this year? Like, what was he supposed to do? Have you ever watched football in your life? Have you ever followed the careers of tight ends? Tight ends don't come in as stars. Just because of Sam LaPorta and Bowers now, the expectation is you're a bust tight end if you don't get 1,000 yards receiving? That's not how it works. I mean, was Mason Taylor in a situation where he possibly could have put up big numbers? I mean, let's use our brain here. He wasn't in that situation. And if you look at the film and you actually are somebody who watches film, Mason Taylor was open like crazy. And the ball, and Justin Fields was sitting there holding the ball, not throwing it to him. That's not his fault. So if we're going to sit, I'm not declaring Mason Taylor a great tight end. I'm saying we don't know. I saw flashes. I saw things that I liked about Mason Taylor. The one thing I'll say is, if you're going to sit there and judge him and say that he's not a good tight end, or he won't be a good tight end based on this season and the situation he was in, you just don't know about football. Like, you got to go and just learn about football. Start over. Pretend you don't know anything and get somebody and take a football 101 class. Because how in the world was Mason Taylor supposed to be any better than he was this season playing for the New York Jets?
Finished number 369 yards and a touchdown on 44 catches in 13 games. He missed four games. So if we want to do a pace stat over 17 games, again, with the context that the quarterback play that he dealt with. So what's 369 divided by 13 times 17? Not a math guy. I never claimed to be, but we'll multiply that by 17. About 483 yards receiving over that's paced out for. Which, again, as the second or third option as a tight end, I don't know. I think it was okay. I think he had an okay rookie year.
If he was dropping passes, or if you looked at next generation stats and saw that he wasn't open a lot. You know, and no, Bergoda, I don't think I'm an expert. I just think you're an idiot. You see, I think that's the difference. I think I'm just a regular dude who doesn't know if Mason Taylor, what he can be yet. And I think I saw potential in him. And you're somebody who believes you can judge a tight end who's a rookie and playing for the New York Jets and know whether they're a good tight end or not. And that to me is, that's not about not being an expert. You just have to have a brain to have that much awareness to be able to know that you can't judge Mason Taylor on the New York Jets this year. You know what I mean? Like he's just not, you can't completely judge him. But, and then you could look at so many tight ends in our league in history, historically, in the last 40 years, and look at their rookie year. There are many tight ends that have had great careers that if you look at their rookie year, you're not going to see big stats.
Usually takes a little bit. And I don't think Mason Taylor is going to be an elite level tight end. I think he's going to be just an average starting tight end, but like, I don't know.
I think for a young quarterback, you're getting yourself a guy with good, reliable hands. Like, he looked to me like and he was that in college too. Like, he's a vacuum. He doesn't drop many balls. He's not going to get you tons of yak. He's not a huge playmaker. He's just a guy who's going to get open, because we see in the film that he gets open, and he's not going to drop the ball very often. Like, you know, he's a reliable target, and we'll see what that pans out to in the NFL. Hey, man, there's a chance we might take Sadiq with that 16th pick, and I wouldn't be against it.
That's what Dano just said. Mason Taylor will be just fine as the second fiddle to Sadiq, I promise.
Yeah, there you go. And I wouldn't be against it, because Sadiq is... Because when we drafted Mason Taylor, right, he was a second round pick. He wasn't like this top rated, golden, generational type guy. He was a guy that we think we could be a good, solid starting tight end in the league, with maybe an outside chance to be bigger and better than that. But hey, if Sadiq is sitting there at 16 and that's the direction they want to go, especially if you take Dante Moore, right?
Yeah,
because then you got your familiar target, and that's fine. But we don't know what Mason Taylor is and what he's going to be. And anybody who says that they do know is not a football fan, or they're not a knowledgeable one. Because I could tell you it's true for almost every position. It's almost impossible to completely judge a player and know what they're going to be from their rookie year. Usually it's because they flash and they show positive things, or they have to be really ridiculously negative. Like, it has to be ridiculously negative to know they'll never be good.
No, I'm with you on that. So, all right, let's try to steer this back and get back to the Dante Moore stuff. Okay, so we talked through the ridiculousness of that initial claim. But what happens if, and I'm not saying for the reasons that Todd McShay laid out, but let's say Dante Moore decides they lose to Indiana. He feels he has unfinished business at Oregon, wants to go back. He's 20 years old, doesn't have a ton of starts, the whole thing. What is the plan then after that?
See, I don't know what you're supposed to do, right? Like, even if Dante Moore comes out, they have to like him. Like, even if he comes out, you can't take him just because he's the only guy there and you have to take him. Like, the Jets scouting staff, the Jets have to like him. Like, I'm not going to weigh in on it. Like, I don't know yet. I'm going to keep watching him, and I haven't even started with the film yet for the next 2 months. And even then, I'm not going to pretend I know, because with quarterback, nobody
it's
knows.
Hard.
But I will say, they better like him. It better not be because he's the only guy there. Like, it better be that they really believe in him. Their jobs are on the line. The organization, the franchise is on the line. Everything is on the line for that, right? So they better believe in him if they take him. They better love him. So, you know, if he goes back to school and he's not there, there really might not be an answer. Except free agency. Bringing in a bridge, maybe taking a few shots in the middle rounds. Like, I don't know what to tell you at that point, right? I mean, if there's no guy to draft, like, what are you going to do? Like, it's a good question, because there's no answer to it. There is nothing you can do except look at your other options. What are the other options? I think I'd be shocked if they didn't at least try to take a stab or two at quarterback if Moore wasn't there later on in the draft. Just, you know, maybe end up with your backup quarterback, or maybe you strike gold and, you know, hit the lottery. But I mean, what are we supposed to do? Then you have to find a bridge, and then you have to find your answer in 27. And maybe the bridge turns out to be the answer. Like, we've talked about Malik Willis or something like that. If you get really lucky.
Yeah. I was just going to say, you play the Malik Willis game and you take, I don't know, whoever your favorite mid-round quarterback prospect is. You pray one of them looks good in the preseason. You get a look at both of them probably during the year. And then, like, in all likelihood, you're probably taking your guy in 2027. I think Glenn has to hope that they are able to build out the roster well enough, and that Malik Willis or whoever their bridge is provides a high enough floor where they could at least hover around 500 to then get that opportunity to take that player. Because if they go from 3-14 to 8-9 next year, that's probably enough for Aaron Glenn to stay around, even if that's not a not a playoff team. I mean, they were right around 500, let's say.
Oh my God, he'd be unbearable if we finish 8-9. He'll be sitting there going, "I told you to buckle in, and this is it." You know, no, look, 8-9. I know there's some people that are still mad, and they'll like, especially because how did we lose those 9 games, and in what ways did we, you know, did it piss people off that we lost? And they'll be looking to criticize them, but from a holistic point of view, if you go from 3-14 to 8-9, there is no way to say that's not a giant step of growth. Right. Like if that was that, I mean, are you even confident it can happen? I mean, like it would be crazy to have people complaining about it, because right now I don't even know if it's even possible for us to go 8-9.
No, I wanted to clarify that that's not like my expert opinion on any stretch of imagination. Yeah. I'm saying like, that's what Aaron Glenn would have to be hoping for him to keep his job and then be able to take that real swing at a quarterback.
I think he's got at a minimum, I would think, I mean, if we're just, it's a guessing game, but I would guess what? He has to win 7 games minimum. And that's not even his job is safe. It's just, if it's less than 7, he's got to be fired, you'd think. But like if he wins 7 games and it's 7-10, then I think in that range, I think it's 7. It depends on how we finish the season. If you know what was going on during the season, then all these different intangibles come in. And then when you get to 8 wins, it's like it's hard to imagine they'd fire him.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on it. And it's just, it's a tough spot to be in. Do you think we're better off? Like, should we be rooting for Oregon and Dante Moore to win this game and potentially win the national championship so that he can come out? And then here's my conspiracy. What if Dante Moore beats Fernando Mendoza and then wins the national championship and says, "I'm going to come out of school"? Then would the Raiders go, "Oh my God, I want that guy"? And then the Jets get Fernando Mendoza anyway at the end of the day. Maybe
First of all, I was going to say it's only January, the first week of January.
Yeah.
So, and we've seen over the years, this is not a generational guy. Mendoza's not Trevor Lawrence, Peyton Manning, the Andrew Luck year. That's not one of those kind of years, right? It's not a year where you have this one generational guy that everybody's going crazy for. He's simply not. Or, you know, so that doesn't mean I'm saying that Mendoza's not going to go number one. I'm saying that he's not been, nobody's used the word generational for him, which means, especially in January, that a lot can change between now and April. And you just said it. There's a football game coming up where the two quarterbacks are actually playing in the same game against each other. So the results of that game obviously could mean something. And if Dante Moore wins a national championship, as opposed to, let's say, coming out this week and sucking, there's a big difference in what the Raiders might do. What if Mendoza struggles and doesn't look good at all and the Ducks win, and then they win the national championship and Dante Moore plays great? The whole world's going to be saying Dante Moore, number one, Dante Moore, right? And so there's a lot that can change over the next couple of weeks. We have no idea, you know, how that's going to all pan out. Right now, if I was a betting man, I'd say 80% the Raiders are taking Mendoza.
Yeah, you know? That's probably fair. But you have to leave that little bit open, though. It's not a 100%, and that could obviously change, but I think it was good.
When I was watching the playoff game last week, when I was watching Oregon play, they kept putting the graphic up. Here are the top quarterbacks in the draft, and they had Dante Moore above Mendoza. Now, I know that's hype and the media is full of crap. I'm just saying it's not this foregone conclusion. They had Dante Moore above Mendoza in the graphic, and they kept showing it the entire game. And I was sitting there going, really? I was like, and I assume it's because it was the Oregon game, and that's what they like to do. They like to hype up players in the game. But the fact that they would even do that, that they would have him listed above him, shows that this is not over yet. We don't know 100%. And by the way, if there are 8 GMs in the league that would take Dante Moore over Mendoza, right, and the rest would all take Mendoza, you don't know that the Raiders aren't one of the 8.
Yep. I don't think this is a year where it is consensus. And like you said, 80 is probably a good number to predict the percentage that Fernando Mendoza goes number one overall. But they're two very different quarterbacks. Like if you are a team that wants to go with a guy who's high floor, Fernando Mendoza offers that. But he may have a limited ceiling, where Dante Moore, I think, is higher variance guy, but I understand what people find attractive about him as a quarterback prospect when watching him. I think he needs a lot of work. I would personally sit him. I don't think he should start at the beginning of his rookie year. But you know, it depends on what you like out of the quarterback spot and what these GMs like.
Yeah. Like, you don't know for sure. Now, I said 80%, I think the Raiders take Mendoza. And if Indiana wins this game easily and Mendoza plays really well and Moore struggles, then I think it goes to like 95%. It's going to be hard to find any way how you could justify that they're, you know, that it's going to happen, that they're going to take Dante Moore over Mendoza. It's really hard to see. For me, it's impossible to see. Like right now, in the moment right now, I just can't see it that way. I you know, that's my opinion. I've watched Mendoza, I've watched Dante Moore. There's no world that my mind lives in that I would ever take Moore over Mendoza. And then we always assume that the GM for any NFL team is going to see what we so strongly believe ourselves. But hey, man, one football game could change everything. We watched that guy, Chambly or whatever, for an Ole Miss. Nobody knew his name. Nobody knew who the hell he was. I can't even say his name. And he came out and he rocked it for one game. And now we got people saying, you know, and you know, first round pick, we could pick him at 16. And we saw guys like Trey Lance work their way into the top five for doing less. So in this league, when you're talking about quarterback, you have no idea what's going to happen. So if that's true for him, for Ole Miss, that he put himself in the conversation from one good game, then what's the truth if we watch this playoff game, Indiana versus the Ducks, and Moore completely outplays Mendoza? Are we really going to say that it can't, the tide can't turn?
Of course. You say it's only January. We got to get to late April here.
So, yeah, I mean, and maybe I am holding on to a prayer because I am a Mendoza guy. You know, yeah. I am a Mendoza guy. So maybe I'm holding on to a prayer. It's possible. But there's still a football game to be played. And I've seen crazier things happen. I don't know how many people expected Cleveland to take Baker Mayfield, number one, in that draft.
No, that's a perfect example of it. Dano, great show, fellas. Moore forever, Sadiq to Kansas City. That would be a good, that'd be a good spot for him to go. I think Travis Kelce retires. We obviously know Dano loves himself some Dante Moore, and he's not the only one. There are people, you know, out there who like Dante Moore as the number one quarterback in this class.
Yeah.
Let's do a couple more comments before we hop out of here. We have Rusty Spooner. This is an interesting one. Hopefully we can get a haul for a picks for the number two pick. Do you want to see them trade out?
If Dante Moore is not in this draft and there's no quarterback for us to take, and somebody makes us, nobody would make a stupid offer. That's the thing. So I think the trade out would be more trading down like with the Giants. But let's say they gave us their number two pick to do that. Or I don't know what the price would be to move up from six to two. But I assume it would be kind of expensive based on what we've seen in the past few years. You know, so I wouldn't be completely against that. I don't see how. I mean, let's say the Jets hated Dante Moore. Let's say the Jets didn't like him. And he does come out in the draft, but the Jets don't like him. Just not, or at least at two. They don't like him at two. And then somebody wants to come up and grab Dante Moore. And they offer us some stupid offer like San Francisco did to, you know, to go up and get Trey Lance. I'm not going to turn down that deal.
No, I don't think you can.
You combine that with the picks we already have. It would be the most like potent, most valuable purse of picks probably in the history of the NFL. Can you imagine us getting the haul that the 49ers got for Trey Lance? Getting that haul with what we already have? Can you imagine the rebuild that we can have, like the young talent that we could bring in? It'd be crazy. It'd be crazy.
Yeah. I like this one from Dinosaurs and Pirates. Imagine Dante goes back to school. We tank this year, got number one, and then took Dante Moore next year number one. That'd be some real New York Jets shit. Yeah. That's a good point to go back to where we started this segment with Todd McShay. Who's to say that the Jets wouldn't take him number one overall next year if they had the pick?
Right. You don't know. And why does he think he would go number one next year? Next year, Arch Manning ended the season pretty strong. He looked pretty good to me. I think if Arch Manning next year comes in and plays the way he did in the last six or seven games that he played for Texas this year and builds on that, you know, you got Arch as your number one pick. That's my prediction now. I think that you're going to, you know, unless he doesn't progress, I think you're going to see Arch Manning as the number one pick next year. And there's a couple of other guys that are going to be coming out. And we saw a bunch of guys that were projected to be top 10 picks this year in September, after a few weeks of not playing well in college football and not living up to their expectations, they fell out of the conversation completely. So who says that Dante Moore is not going to fall back? We don't know for 100% that he won't, you know, and that's a reason why I don't think he's going to stay in school, or it doesn't make sense to me. You have a guaranteed $45 million contract waiting for you at number two, whether it's the Jets or somebody else who trades up with the Jets. Why would you stay in school and gamble that? What, for an $8 million NIL contract or whatever?
Exactly.
Doesn't make any-
or risk injury, too, if you go back or like.
Look, all you have to do if you're his agent is say, is remind him of Drew Aller.
Mm-hmm.
And say, what if this happens to you? Or the kid that we drafted from
Jordan
Florida.
Travis.
Right. I mean, like, we've seen so many, we've seen it happen. We've seen guys get seriously hurt. Like, it's $45 million. It's very easy for someone to say, yeah, but things will probably be okay. And then you'll get drafted by a better team and you'll have a better second contract and all that. You got to realize, come on, man. It's $45 million guaranteed. Safe and secure. All you have to do is come out. It's very hard for me to imagine that to walk away from that.
I don't think he can. I don't think he can. I think he'd be silly too. So I think Dante Moore comes out. But if he doesn't, my God, does that create a bit of a tough situation for the New York Jets with pick number two?
Yeah. I mean, it creates a real dilemma. He doesn't. Like, I think it's really like a messed up thing. Like, the year that we're picking second, first of all, that we went 3-14 and we're picking second and not first sucks. But then when you pile on top of that, if he stays in school, that we happen to have picked a year where there's not even a number two quarterback to consider, that really sucks. But sometimes without even knowing it, it's a blessing.
Yeah.
Sometimes, like, what if Dante Moore doesn't come out, right? We have to get a bridge quarterback, and Malik Willis, and he turns out to be a stud, and he's our guy. Or we draft, you know, we get Malik Willis, he's just okay. We draft a quarterback next year that has a different name, and Dante Moore gets drafted, and Dante Moore is a huge bust, and the guy we draft is a franchise quarterback. Like, some bad things can turn out to be really good things. Like, watch the movie Sliding Doors, and you'll know what I'm talking about.
Or what if, you know, most of us wanted Fernando Mendoza. What if Mendoza goes one, Moore goes two, and Moore's better? There's been times where the number two quarterback taken has been better than the guy who goes first.
Oh, you think so? Recently. I don't know if you'd still call C.C. Stroud better than Young.
C.C.
C.C. C.J. Stroud. C.C. I call him C.C.
Have you ever gotten a name right on this show?
I don't think I ever have.
No. I love this show. I really did.
You know, I get Dano's right name.
We love Dano. His name.
And by the way, I see him in the chat, and I just have to say, Rusty Spooner, you're a savage.
Rusty Spooner is a savage. Guys, that's going to do it for us on this episode. Thank you so much for hanging out. I'm Matt. He's Jeremy. We'll be back next week. Talk to you soon.